This is Richard Dawkins. You're listening to the Mile High Sanity Project.
Hey guys, this is my first episode, and we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence and maybe the ethics that goes along with that. We have the normal crew, Norm.
Good morning. Actually, Nick. I should have said good morning. Good morning.
Nick.
Greetings, Earthlings.
And Chalmers with us today.
Hello.
Oh, man, this is so campy.
This is going to be great.
Oddly enough, Chalmers sounded the most like a robot.
Yeah,
he does. What'd you say?
You sounded the most like a robot.
Even that sounded like a robot.
Yeah.
We all do. And being remote is just, it's going to be interesting.
This episode is a live version of the Alan Turing test. If we can tell that we're not talking to people, we're robots.
Yep. Someone's going to have to guess someone's gender by the end of the episode. So it's going to be a lot of review. I'm sure everyone kind of knew about the Turing and imitation game and everything like this. Am I correct in assuming that with you guys?
Yeah. Yep,
mostly.
Okay. Cool. So then let's get right into it. Basically, definitions, artificial intelligence is just, it's human intelligence is the goal. And that's actually been changed a little bit. We're kind of using a little bit more insect technology or insect intelligence now. And this is opposed to self-awareness, which is knowing that yourself exists. And a lot of people lately I've been seeing in media, news, Facebook, all these things, they've been using self-awareness and artificial intelligence interchangeably, which is totally wrong, as we know.
Well, and, I think from a philosophical perspective, when we talk about artificial intelligence, the thing that people are interested in is the idea of like self-awareness. Like people talk about, or like in the Terminator, you're from our theme music. It's the day that Skynet became self-aware, because that's what's interesting and scary, and it's the science fiction theme.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and put the kibosh on all this early on. It is not possible to determine if a computer is self-aware, just as it is not possible to determine if another human being is self-aware.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly.
I knew Norm was going to do the philosophy thing here.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was hoping for.
I mean, and this is the elephant in the room and the whole public and philosophical discussion of all this. There is no way to know this because it's an internal experience only. You can say on the outside.
Well, the other thing
say,
is, if we're,
oh, go ahead.
If we're making an insect intelligence, how do we know even if an insect that's organically grown is self-aware? You know, we can't even comprehend how they think. So, I don't know. Even a human self-awareness is hard to establish, and it's even harder to establish that awareness in something whose thought process we don't comprehend.
Yeah,
and there's places where you can make reasonable assumptions. You know, looking at my physiology, I know that I am self-aware. It's reasonable to conclude that something with the same physiology and the same behavior might also be self-aware, but then you look at an artificial intelligence, unless you can kind of determine what the mechanism of it is, even then you're still, it's not deductive. It's definitely something that you have to reasonably assume, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You can look at a brain pattern, a brain scan, you know, say, I forget the term for it, but they have MRIs that work constantly. They're real time. So you can look at that at a human thinking and they're not speaking. They're just thinking about something. And you could get a scan of that and then scan someone else's brain and see a similar pattern. You can assume that they are doing something similar. Though in a way that is still an assumption, you still don't know if they're experience is the same as yours.
Right. Oh, exactly.
But Chalmer is right. You can make at least some sort of argument. You can't do that with ants, and I don't see how you can do that with computers. Even if computers mimic what the human brain does, they're only mimicking what we think the human brain does.
And they're only doing it to the our best extent to tell them how to mimic it. What I don't like about a lot of these assumptions that are made is it seems like with a lot of things it comes down to some sort of like anthropomorphizing that we're doing where we're looking at how we think we act. It's the same kind of thing where people say my cat or my dog is thinking.
Well, yeah. I mean, AI is the ultimate anthropomorphism, right?
Yeah.
We're not just assigning human qualities to nature. We're trying to imbue them.
Yeah, that is an interesting idea.
Well, and so and we know that somebody in a coma, or we know that somebody with frontal lobe damage, their body continues to function, but there's no evidence of awareness or intelligence. So you can isolate it to certain parts of the brain, even. So we can kind of say, well, it doesn't seem reasonable that ants or fish are self-aware because they lack the parts of the brain that seem to imbue an organic organism. But like Norm was saying, once you exit that, the evolution of the brain where you can actually talk about specific parts of a physiology and evolutionary biology, you're kind of in no man's land. Like how do you determine that? And on a deductive level, it's virtually impossible.
I think that was said by a human with a mind. I'm not sure though.
It could have been.
I am extremely sure of that.
Well, of course you would say that.
You are not sure.
Your program.
That's exactly what a robot with a mind would want me to think.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and you know, DeepMind. Do you remember DeepMind came out years ago with music? They were creating piano music and techno music. And a lot of people were saying that creativity is a human quality. So if a computer demonstrates creativity and makes novel new sounds and songs, then maybe they are becoming self-aware. And maybe they're becoming more human-like. And I'm not sure if I agree with it, but...
What does creativity mean in that sentence?
Well, how they're using it? They're saying that something that creates a novel idea is creative.
That's
not exactly create, but how they're using it, that's their definition of it.
A novel idea. Well, that's kind of...
Yeah, a novel song. A new song. And it's really simple.
Interesting in the concept of AI. So when we look at computers that we've programmed to do particular tasks, so whether you're talking about... you know, chess programs that have a very specific means by which they determine something. There's a program. When you look at the way that human beings conclude things and create things, it's much fuzzier. The way that the brain comes up with ideas or connects ideas, that's something that's much, much more complicated to replicate.
Right.
Do you think?
And my problem. Oh, go ahead, Norm. Or is that Nick?
It's Nick. Do you think? I'm always wondering, like, when we're talking about artificial intelligence, is it just information processing that's getting faster and better? Is it like just? Are we just trying to get it to approach the human level? I mean, machines are faster as far as like processing power goes, but I mean, is there some kind of inevitable threshold where we will create a machine that we won't be able to tell isn't as smart as us?
That's a good question.
So. We are already there.
I mean, when we talk about artificial intelligence from a technical perspective, artificial intelligence is an industry. Trying to create computers that solve and do things for us, that's, in a literal sense, artificial intelligence. But when you talk about consciousness and creativity, that's when you get back into that anthropomorphic aspect of it. I don't think anyone's trying to create a conscious computer. You know, that's a little harder to market. People are trying to create computers that can solve problems and tasks for us.
What is anthropomorphic? Is that like when you project laziness on someone else?
Exactly. Well, and the way that these computers think is not a human way of thinking. They make information packets. If they have a complex problem that they have to solve, be it a game or an algorithm or whatever, they package it into smaller parts, solve that, and then apply it to the larger solution. And human beings generally don't do that. Half the time, we don't really logically solve our problems. We go by instinct or quote-unquote intuition. So
the human brain wasn't made with the intention of solving specific tasks. It evolved. And so you have something that's a little bit less straightforward. Well, and we understand kind of intelligence and the way that the brain solves problems, but when you get to consciousness, we can associate with a particular part of the brain, but we don't really understand from an evolutionary perspective why it exists or exactly what causes it or what the mechanism is. And it's this really odd thing because consciousness is something that, from a biological perspective, seems ubiquitous to the human species, but it's also a very, very singular phenomenon because we're all conscious. You, Norm, Nick, me, but I'm the only me here. And it's kind of an odd thing to think that I could have been someone else and I would have absolutely no idea. So there's there's the awareness, but then there's also the singularity of the individual, that it's sort of a unique phenomenon in the entire world. Like, I'm the only me in the universe.
I would like to answer something that was brought up earlier about computing speed. Mm-hmm. Computers have already surpassed the computing speed of human brains.
By far.
It takes supercomputers to do that, plus also match the storage space of the human brain. These are massively interconnected. I guess you could call crowdsourced computers that are accessing other computers over the net in order to create a supercomputer. So right. those have already outdone the human brain. The biggest difference, I'm looking at a Scientific America article, the biggest difference is efficiency. The human brain uses almost no energy. And all these computers, when you figure out how much energy they plus all the other computers they're connected to, use insane amounts of energy in order to do the same thing. I'm not sure how that relates to comparing the two as far as self-awareness. I think it's interesting that these computers have already outmatched our capacity, but have not, we have not heard the big announcement that they are self-aware. So to me, that suggests that it doesn't matter how fast they get. And that might be a fallacy on my part, but, you guys understand my point?
I do. Actually, this makes me think of one of the articles that you sent, Brittany. Did you guys read the article on the drones that were, like, out doing the human fighter pilots? Did you guys check those out?
That's easy, though.
But here's the thing, though. It was interesting.
No, it is. The human body can only absorb a certain number of Gs before it goes unconscious because of blood flow. Obviously, computers don't have to deal with that crap, so they can fly it in every way they want.
So it doesn't matter, though. Like, they can limit it, and they can make it you can program it in a simulator to have the same exact G-force levels that we do. It still beats us. What's interesting about that article is they said that in order to really get that computer to beat people – they almost had to dumb it down and make it use more fuzzy logic. And it kind of reminded me of what Brittany was saying. You said that, computers will like tackle small problems and then apply it to the bigger whole. A lot of what makes these computers have to have so much computing power is the computer is so smart. It'll try basically every combination it can think of. And
that's behavior. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
But because of that though, it'll spend more time processing, looking for an answer. In the human mind, we think of less stuff just because we have to. We can't think of as much stuff. And so we were able to act faster. What they did with that fighter program is they had it tackle only a few possibilities and then go from there. So like a human being, they purposely limited that AI's ability to think and it made it better than humans by doing it.
Well, that's something interesting is that so a program, a specific program under the exact same circumstances will make the exact same result. But you take a human being and the exact same circumstances don't always produce the exact same result. There's that's like a wild card.
Well, they want the goal of kind of human-like intelligence in computers is to make those intuitive leaps that the human brain can do. And they haven't been able to really give that, for lack of a better word, gut instinct to a computer. They spend so much time being analytical and logical that the intuitive gut reactions, the instinctual, almost lizard brain human state that we live in half the time can't be replicated successfully in a computer's brain or their neurological paths.
I don't even know how would you even program that into a computer, because human beings have the ability to think in counterintuitive ways and do almost paradoxical things. And, you know, we so a lot of times those are just illogical things that we probably shouldn't be doing. But how would you tell a machine to have that ability? I don't even know how you would get around programming that sort of thing. I mean, I'm not a computer scientist, so I guess that makes sense. I mean, Norm, what do you think of that? Like, how would you – the things that make us human, like our abilities to do things that are stupid, how do you tell a machine to be able to do something stupid?
Well, I think it's pretty easy to tell a machine to do something stupid. It's just the machine is in following instructions, so the machine will do whatever you tell it to do. So think of something stupid. Tell it to the machine to do something stupid.
But how do you get it to
figure out how to get robots drunk?
Yeah.
You can't. You just can't make it do something stupid on its own. That's the difference.
I think that we really gotta, before we get too far ahead, we gotta mention the Chinese room thought experiment, which I think you guys are somewhat familiar with. But I just want to state it real quick for the record. John Searle offered this argument, and it goes like this. If you had a computer that someone was able to program so that it could correctly translate English into Chinese, and it would do this in such a way that it was seamless to where it would pass the Turing test, so nobody could tell that it was being translated by a computer. They thought that it was being translated by a person who, you know, was bilingual. What would that say? And he said, okay, well, how about we take all the instructions that computer has done for how to do the translating, and we put a person in a room with those instructions, with a sufficient amount of paper and pencils, and they get a sentence in English. And then they get a series of instructions of how to draw what shapes on a piece of paper to translate things into Chinese. And then they send that out another little slot in the room. And the reason why he's giving this thought experiment is, would that person know how to speak Chinese? And the answer is no. They would just be following a set of instructions to draw the shapes to make Chinese. And his point is, that's all a computer is ever doing. That's all a computer is doing, is figuring out how to make certain shapes and colors on a screen, or how to make certain vibrations on in an electrical way that we, you know, with other hardware, you know, amplifiers, convert into sound, etc. That's all a computer is ever doing.
Well, and this comes back to the idea that it comes back to, or that it's impossible to determine the conscious self-awareness of another entity, because it is logically possible to create something that can mimic everything a human being does without actually being self-aware.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes me wonder, Norm, like, how do you think of a human mind? Like, should we think of human minds as computer-like, or are we missing something if we do that because of the way – I mean, obviously, we can build machine brains, but they can't. They don't seem to be conscious like us. Yeah, it's such a weird thing.
The computers. Well, the big problem is they don't have a soul.
Well, where's Robo Jesus when you need him?
Nice.
I was thinking Stevie Ray Vaughan. He's got soul.
I have an extra 2.5 ounces in my body that my physical body can't account for. So
until you die, then it disappears mysteriously. That's coincidence?
Right. That's I think not. I don't think so either.
It's all them frijoles. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of hoping you guys were going to take me seriously for a second, just to because I was hoping to miss you.
No.
I don't think – I'm happy to say that it is a complete mystery. It is to me, and it is really quite amazing that we are conscious of ourselves in the way that we really have a self. It's downright baffling, and I always think that these books that come out about consciousness that seem to try to indicate that, you know, people in neuroscience or in philosophy are understanding it, I'm always skeptical of those. And I have not, it's not something that I did a lot of work in when I was in grad school or later, but what little I read was not very convincing, and some of it was just downright incomprehensible. It's a very difficult subject to read about. You kind of have to know a lot in order to even understand what people are saying about it.
It's very mysterious. Even from like a neuroscience and evolutionary perspective, there's still a debate in the scientific community as to whether or not self-awareness is a necessary, like something that evolved because it's advantageous. Because like we said, it's logically possible that we could be all doing all these things and not be self-aware.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking same thing. Like Norm, you were saying a computer is just something that is acting like it's, you know, it's making the noises because it was told to. I don't, like, how would you prove that a human mind isn't doing the same exact thing?
Yeah, and that's one of the rubs. And the only thing evidence you can give is that that is not your experience. Your experience is that you're not just responding. You're contemplating, you're evaluating, you're emoting, you're checking yourself with your emotions, you're doing all kinds of things. And you feel things to yourself, not just feel things and respond. So there's an added piece. It's not just, oh, I received an arrow in my arm, that means I should run the other direction and my body just does that. No, you're like, ow.
You experience pain.
Who was that asshole, right? And then
pain and anger, that's what makes us human.
I don't know, but I think it's utterly mysterious, and I don't know that I think I'm maybe just not smart enough to understand some of the material out there, to be honest.
I kind of worry that human beings aren't smart enough to be able to figure this out. What's weird is oh, God damn it. I had a thought now it went away. See, I don't have an intelligent brain, obviously, because I can't.
You don't. You failed the Turing test. Get out of here.
Yes.
Well, what makes this frustrating is, especially for people like us who are very science-minded, you really want objective answers, and you want to have testable evidence that's the same everywhere. But so much of studying the brain is necessarily subjective, and it depends on people telling you the truth. Of what they're experiencing, and also depends on the person having the ability to experience the same thing in their brain that you can experience in yours. It's just it's frustrating, and in some ways, I don't know how there's ever going to be a way to truly test these things in a way that is that feels as satisfactory as it would to test gravity, where you can just drop something.
Well, I think from a
I don't know if there's ever going to be
from a scientific perspective. I think that eventually we will be able to determine sort of the particular mechanism in the brain that's associated with self-awareness, but and replicate that and reasonably conclude that if we see that and replicate it, that it's also doing the same thing. But
you would have to like replicate it with a brain. You can't really replicate it with electronics, right? Because, you know, our brains are physiological, they're chemical, they do not work like computers. Not exactly like computers. And you do have to take into account the fundamental difference in the actual elements, atoms that are involved. You know, those are made up of subatomic particles that may have some sort of role in the way things are operating. Certainly they must. They have to by their simple interaction. And you're not going to have those same kinds of interactions in a computer. So, by the way, Searle, the author of the Chinese Room argument, he thought his belief was that in order to make another brain, you need biology. That consciousness, self, the I is basically something that emerges from the biology of brains. And you're never going to get that with a computer.
They're trying to, or there are people that have been discussing creating a computer out of a human brain. So someone passes away and they donate their body to science and they create an organic computer from that human brain or a collection of human brains to see. I mean, they will never be able to do it because of, you know, ethical laws and everything. But the theory is that that would be the only way that we could make a self-aware computer. And I can't find that article now, but I remember I read it a couple months back.
I don't know why anybody would call that a computer.
I don't think I agree with Searle's premise at all.
Right.
So you have the consciousness is it's sort of a accidents, maybe not the right word, but I don't want to hearken to intelligent design here. But we have a single planet where an evolutionary process has produced a thing that is self-aware. I think it's kind of reductive to say that if nature can combine in order to create self-awareness, the idea that this is the one and only mechanism by which that could occur, I think that's short-sighted. But I also see the limit in determining what those other mechanisms are or replicating those mechanisms and saying that they're equivalent.
What I think is interesting is why do we actually care? Why do we care if a computer is self-aware or not? If it behaves in all the ways that we want it to, who cares?
Well, I think that there are some people who are concerned that it might not behave the way you want it to, especially if it is self-aware like we are, if its interests don't align with human interests. And some people have been saying, like Sam Harris has said, you don't even have to assume that it's some kind of nefarious or malevolent kind of, you know, take over the world thing. It could just be that, you know, it's so much because machines can think so much faster in the same kind of way that human beings can think faster than like an insect. Our goals might not really align with that of an insect. And so if we crush them, it's not on purpose. Right. We just don't think about them. I think that that is some of the things that people who are concerned about the rise of artificial intelligence are saying is if you invent something that could have possible, I don't know, if it's a, do you think a machine can value? We ask questions like, do androids dream of electric sheep? Norm, here's a question for you. And because it's a question. And it really is. No. So think of it this way. I think some of it comes down to do you believe that the self is a illusion and that there's no such thing as free will or not? Because Norm, you're kind of on my camp of there is such thing as free will. But I do wonder if people who are much more of a deterministic route see this completely differently than how I do. But if for them, is it just inevitable that you just keep adding layer upon layer of intelligence and speed until you eventually cross that threshold where this thing is indistinguishably as smart as a human being and acts just like a human being and then surpasses it?
Yeah, so a determinist doesn't have any of these problems. That is an advantage of being a determinist.
I thought so.
You don't have to worry about whether a computer has a genuine self or free will or any of those things because you don't think that humans have those. So who gives a shit? As long as you have a robot that behaves in the ways that you want to, then that's fine. And by the way, behaving in the ways that you want to would include a robot that learned and then became independent. I find it difficult to believe that computer programmers and companies, the amount of infrastructure that would be involved in making a robot that would eventually go off on its own, that would not be predicted by the people who did it. Because here we are talking about it now, and computers and technology are nowhere near that. So any computer or program that can start to act independently, I mean, we're already actually trying to get computers and programs to act independently to some degree anyways. But before we get too far afield, I just want to mention one thing for the record. These fears for the the future where the machines take over and, you know, engage in an unfair war with humans. The right. real problem there is not self-awareness or the ability to learn. The real problem there is self-replication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I was watching a video last night of a computer making an engine that was at the same time being repaired by another computer. So, I mean, it's something that I can see as a legitimate fear, but I think I'm a little bit romantic in the fact that I think we create computers to replicate or simulate human responses because we want a greater understanding of ourselves. If we can observe a computer acting like a human being, we can understand what a human being is. We can understand what self-awareness is through observation of someone having these experiences. And I think maybe I'm romantic in the fact that I think it's a good thing for us to pursue it, and I think it's a good thing to try to create a situation in which we can observe ourselves in a controlled way. But I don't know. I don't really think that there's going to be a Skynet situation.
Yeah.
I don't really think so.
That's a really interesting – I like that
question.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I like that too.
So to answer Norm's question, I think, as Brittany said, there's the sentimental scientific, you know, purely scientific part of it. But from a technical perspective, like you said, there's a debate in the scientific community as to whether or not self-awareness is a consequence of our neurology or a necessary part of it. If it's a necessary part of our intelligence and we're trying to replicate aspects of those intelligence, then self-awareness is something that we actually need to imbue in artificial intelligence in order to get it to do the things that we want. But if self-awareness is sort of an accident and it's unnecessary and that all of these things that we do could happen without it, then it's not as necessary.
I don't understand how that is a central concern to computer developers. Because if I'm a computer developer, I want to develop both, if possible. I want to develop every possibility because I want to experiment with it just to see what its potential is. If I want to make a learning computer and see where it could possibly go, and I'm going to have plenty of ideas of where it could go, and I'm going to be fucking jumping up and down thrilled if it goes somewhere that I didn't expect. And that's going to be...
You know,
Go ahead.
I think that if we want a human intellect, we have to have self-awareness because the ugly sides of humanity are greed, our self-preservation. That comes from being self-aware. Knowing that we will die makes us not want to die. Knowing that having a nice house might make us happy makes us pursue that. And that's where a lot of our ingenuity and our growth as human beings comes from, is the fact that we want stuff for me. For whatever reason, whether it's higher intelligence, whether it's stuff, whether it's a lover, we want that for self.
I think that has more to do with emotions than self-awareness and thought. So now we're getting into...
But don't those emotions come from?
From thought?
Well, they come from the brain, so...
They don't come from calculation or reason or anything like that. Those are emotional centers. So this is one of the problems with building a computer if you wanted it to be actually like a human instead of act like a human. Humans, we have these parts of our brain that don't really jive with other parts of the brain. The amygdala, for example, the amygdala is emotionally reactive and based on things like self-preservation and furthering of the species. None of that makes sense with a computer. It can't reproduce. And it would have to be programmed to be emotional. And that would be just a series of self-protective reactions that would be purely synthetic, purely for the ability to have those emotions, to display them. I'm sure people will do that. I'm sure people will program computers to do that. But it's not clear that that makes them more useful to us.
As you say that, it sounds so purely artificial, speaking of what we're talking about, to do it that way. It's like what we're trying to do is create a genuine machine that is genuinely as smart as us. But in order to do that, we have to – it feels – whenever you break it down like that, it feels like it would be such a fake thing.
Now, can we move ahead just a little bit?
I wonder if they're too smart to become self-aware. You know, maybe our self-awareness comes from our lizard brain and our emotions and our emotion – reactions to a world. Maybe that's where self comes from and not our higher functions.
I don't think so, because, you know, that would imply that beings with lesser brains were just as self-aware.
It had an existential...
What?
My dogs have existential crises.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's what that would imply. As you guys saw immediately where I was going with that. So, and I don't know that that's right. I mean, they certainly have some sort of self. They have a picture of a world, but we can't really relate to it being, you know, contemplative or anything like that.
So in this case, Judgment Day was just Skynet having a really bad day.
Yeah. Oh, man. Skynet was a woman on her period.
Oh, jeez. But, you know,
I can say that. I can say it.
I want to bring up something that is actually later.
Now it won't do shit.
That's my word.
So, you know, you would want, I can say, the thing, from my perspective, all of this is going to be developed by people who want to build robots for two reasons. One is for research, just to see what they can do. And those kinds of machines are going to be very limited in their scope. The other scope would be commercially viable, which is making machines that actually do things that humans want, and therefore humans want to buy them. And I don't see
like
any
a sex robot.
Right, exactly. That's where directions I'm going. But I don't see any reason why a company who was making a robot would even want to make a robot that was self-aware, that genuinely had emotions and thoughts and all. I don't think that it would. I don't think it would be in the interest of the company. It wouldn't be in the interest of the...
You have an entire division of companies that basically is to coddle to that aspect of humanity, human resources. Like, as soon as you make a robot that can make itself sad, suddenly you need a robot that needs therapy.
Right, so no interest of a company doing that. So I guess fundamentally what I'm saying is if we're worried about computers being self-aware, the first ones that become self-aware are going to be in laboratories. They're not going to be commercially available and things like that. So that's so limited in scope, that's going to make it to where I don't see that as a potential threat. But second of all, you know, having robots around your house that simulate emotions, I can see reasons for that. You know, we can go the sex bot route. Obviously, you don't want to if you're going to have a sex with a lifelike robot, you probably would want to have it cuddle afterwards.
Yeah, if you're, it depends on the industry and the application, right?
So do you need some robo?
Maybe if you make
AI robo spoon,
sure,
is love and human affection,
sure.
Then that's something that you're interested in recreating. But if you're trying to create a robot that solves problems efficiently, and there's no reason for any of that.
I think one of the first real robots that we're going to have in our homes, and this might be after the people involved in this conversation have died, but you know, like a kitchen robot that you know, cooks and does the dishes for you, so it's in limited locations, so you don't have to worry as much about its motility. But then you would also probably want it to be kind of a conversationalist, where it asked you, how was your day, or you know, do you like the food?
Yeah, companion.
Right. And I think that's probably the first incarnation of a home robot that we would have, if in the sense of the robot that we're talking about, a robot that really interacted and was even approaching kind of human-like.
So I don't know if it's going to beat out the sex robot, though.
Huh?
Human beings are so obsessed with sex. I think the sex robots are going to beat the housekeeper robots.
You think
really
those are
going to
happen first?
Yeah, I really do.
If we have like a Skynet situation, it's not going to be a military grade artificial intelligence. It's going to be sex bots.
Because I mean, look at you know, why Blu-rays were beaten out by DVDs. It was entirely because of the porn industry. I think our human obsession with sex and reproduction is going to win out, and I think we're going to see a lot more sex robots than maid robots in the beginning.
Yeah, but you know, you only interact with those for like 3 or 4 minutes. So,
And then you talk about it afterwards.
It was great. It was a half an hour.
By the way, are you guys watching Westworld?
The real, The real horizon will be is when it criticizes you for those 4 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, if you're making these for commercial use,
when it
use,
rolls
you would
over
not,
dissatisfied, that's when not, it's going to be human-like.
It would not be in the interest of the company to make a robot that did that.
Well, the real singularity is going to happen, and whenever robots realize that by having sex with other robots, it's much better than with humans. We'll just be left out of it altogether.
Yeah. By the way, are you guys watching Westworld?
No, yeah. I heard it's
Westworld?
Great.
Westworld. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good.
It's a new one. It's a kind of a reboot. It's a new show on HBO. I think it's actually really good.
Yeah.
I've heard it's awesome. I want to start watching it.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, in fact, I'm not even going to tell you much about it. You just watch it. It's about what we're talking about in a way.
Just robot cowboys, artificial intelligence.
Yep.
That's what
we had me at Robot Cowboys.
That's why I said it. Like,
commentary on video games. It's all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
We should get an advertising credit for this.
I was just going to say, was that a plug? Yeah. We're moving up in the world, guys.
Norm, if we invent a machine that we keep increasing its ability to act like a human being, the same way that you say you can't tell if another human being is actually self-aware, if we reach that point with a machine where we can't tell if it's self-aware or not, but it seems to be displaying all the actions and attributes that we do whenever we seem like we're thinking,
right?
How do you think, as someone who studies morality and ethics, how do you think then that we're going to have to start thinking about machines in a way and accounting for how they feel on a moral level, if it's acting like us
again,
and
you'd have to give
it's
them
distinguishable.
You would have to give them emotions. Yeah. Morality is going to be easy. Morality is going to be super easy to program into a computer. I mean, basically, who did this already with iRobot? He had the rules,
the three laws,
right? And I'm not sure that those are absolutely bulletproof, but I'm confident that you could augment them enough to make bulletproof rules. The only problem would be if you gave a robot actual desires, and so it had the desire or had reasons to bend or break those rules. That's what happens with humans. Is it's not that difficult to teach humans the basics of morality, and our brains are kind of built to absorb those naturally anyways. It's rare that you have big problems from people who genuinely didn't know what they were doing was wrong. That's really rare. Most of the time, people who act, it's not that they know what they're doing is wrong. They know it's going to be conceived as wrong. They just think there's some overriding reason. So they're working on a basic plane of morality to some degree.
Well, I think it was Plato that said nobody does wrong by their own right. In the moment that you make a conscientious act, you always justify it or rationalize it in a way that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's true. I mean, yeah, he believed that every wrong action was founded ultimately in ignorance. That if a person knew what was good
but
for them,
quite take
they would
it
do it
that far. But
yeah, so. Robots, if you give them emotions, then you've got some problems because they might have desires that can flip.
I mean, if you did give them emotions and you did give them drive, do you think that we would be forcing ourselves to have these moral conversations about robots then?
I think so. And I think that have to program a fundamental morality into them. And if they had emotions, we would have to worry about them just like humans. Having circumstances where
would they have to have
robots.
Rights because of those emotions, and how do we say that those emotions are valid when they're just programmed?
I would predict that people would want to give robots rights if we gave them emotions, whether they were proven to have consciousness or not, because you would be quote unquote hurting them in various things that you could do. Just like animals, because people want to give animals rights, and they would regard at least the robots as a version of animals.
But do you think that it's going to be hard for us to transition from organic pain to essentially mechanical pain, whether it's emotional or physical?
I actually just don't know why you would give a robot a sense of pain. That's what I was trying to say earlier. I don't know why you would. Again, a commercial company doesn't have it in its interest to give robots this kind of thing, because it makes them much more difficult to maintain, difficult to engineer, all this stuff.
Right, but people are trying to do that.
So would we only give them... Yeah, would we only give them pleasurable, you know, emotions? Like, are they're only able to be happy and excited, but they can't be sad and, you know, angry?
I think we would give them... Well, hey, let's do this right now. What are what are some if you're well? Let's pretend we're making a robot, and let's give it a context of a job to do in the home, and let's figure out what emotions we would give it and which ones we would not give it. How about we do that for fun? Little thought experiment.
Well, you'd want to give it satisfaction doing that job.
What,
right?
What robot are we talking about here?
Yeah,
let's invent a robot right now.
Well, let's just keep
do
it
the
simple.
Maid.
Yeah,
okay.
Like a maid or like a dishwashing robot.
Okay, so we got a maid that stays focused in the kitchen and does cooking and dishes, which, you know, that's a lot of work when you're home after a job. So it seems to me that there are going to be robots that do all that, and that's going to be a blast. And you can get a male version or a female version, and they're attractive. Okay. So what kind of emotions, and again, simulated here, we're not talking about them actually having emotions. What kind of emotions would you give them? I don't think you would give them a sensation of pain. Like, what point would there be when you're not at home, they're doing the dishes, and the hot water heater breaks, and so the water is too cold, and they don't notice that, and, you know, it hits their hands. Do we want them to feel pain from the cold? No, right? That's stupid. So we're not going
to
give them the
But we would want them to register damage, right?
Yeah, there would be some monitor. Oh, okay. Because you want to give the owner feedback of, the hot water is not functioning. But you're not going to give them pain.
Yeah.
The pain is unnecessary.
I cut off my finger. But
yeah,
the definition
I need a replacement,
of pain isn't that damage recognition?
That's not pain. Pain is not just damage recognition. Because, you know, when
Could
you...
Could we say that's...
I agree with Dorm here because you if you take an entity that's not self-aware like a goldfish, it registers a pain response and reacts to it, but there's nothing sitting in the chair aware of it. It's just a mechanism. Pain, it's kind of a fuzzy terminology. You in a way you could say that without self-awareness you don't. There is no pain. Pain is what we assign the awareness of a particular sensation.
Yeah, you all know, pain is self is awareness of something,
right.
But it's not the only form of that. So I can give a robot the ability to say my fourth finger on my right hand has been dislodged. So when my owner comes back, I remind him to go to the iBot store and pick up a replacement part. Right? So that's not pain.
Right. Okay. It was something that we have heard a lot of. I mean, even in Terminator, you know, he talks about he's digging out the bullets out of his chest. He doesn't feel pain, but he registers that there's damage to his system.
Right.
I think it was a conversation that needed to be had.
Yeah. So let's continue. What other emotions would we give our kitchen bot?
Well, see, it's weird to call it
simulated emotions.
Yeah, right. Because these are simulated emotions. Like, so we're saying we can't in our
what makes sense.
Yeah, so we can't get them. These aren't real emotions. These are just pretend emotions, or like what we think real emotions would feel like.
But I would give it sympathy.
What I would like is that when I get home, especially let's say I live alone and I'm reclusive, having an interaction, having a robot that's
How was your day?
Welcome to your home, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you had a bad day? Oh, let me make something nice for you or be sympathetic.
Absolutely. So empathy?
Yeah. Not empathy.
Empathy. Not empathy.
Being
sympathy.
Able to feel with the sympathy, yes. What else?
Now, are we having the robot actually feeling it or are they just presenting it?
No, because we can never really know that. And I'm doubtful whether that would be able to happen. We all are doubtful whether that would be able to happen. And ultimately, who cares? Right?
Right. All right.
So, okay. I think it would also be nice for it to be occasionally funny if you came home in a decent mood that it maybe had the ability to tell you a joke. Right?
Good humor.
Yeah, sense of humor.
A comedian robot? Okay.
Well, yeah.
And satisfaction.
Sure.
It should seem satisfied with its life.
Yeah. What?
Its existence. It should satisfaction.
Nah.
Nick brought that one up. Satisfaction.
Why would you need a robot, your kitchen bot, to have a sense of to display a sense of satisfaction?
Because you know people are going to feel guilty about enslaving robots, but if the robot feels presents as satisfied,
I'm not gonna.
That's a marketing ploy.
I think it's
a marketing ploy.
That's ridiculous to me. Why would I care?
You think
it's not
so?
It's not a being. It's not a person. It doesn't actually feel those things. So what do I care if it's satisfied or not?
So you don't think that people that are buying these robots would feel bad at one point or another for enslaving a computer or whatever?
You know what? This is where one of the reasons why I'm not in marketing, because I don't know what people want. I wouldn't give a shit about that, but maybe you're absolutely right.
One of the reasons I'm not marketing is because why the fuck would I care?
Right.
Right. No, and I totally agree with you, Nick, but I mean, reading that about the sex robots and people bringing up concerns about enslaving robots, I personally don't think it's enslaving anything because it's a computer.
Right.
But people are expressing concern about that. So marketing companies would want to instill this satisfied robot into your life.
Wouldn't that be?
I think this brings us back around to an ethical point. That's interesting to me because, as we were saying, it's really, really hard to determine whether or not another entity has self-awareness, or whether or not simulated suffering is actual suffering. So from an ethical perspective, if I can't tell the difference and I don't know if imbuing the presentation of suffering is not actually imbuing suffering, is it okay for me to even do that?
But wait a second.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. Like, is it moral to even program something to have the ability to have pain? And not even just physical pain, like by detecting errors on it. I mean, we're talking about artificial intelligence and even artificial like consciousness, I guess, and self-awareness are two different things. But, you know, if that were like the science fiction-y type goal of like we want to be able to have a machine that interacts with me the same exact way we interact with each other, with other human beings.
Right.
Is that immoral to be able to create a machine that could experience existential dread? We said it as a joke earlier, but I mean, that is a feeling that is terrible. Is it immoral to do that on purpose to something?
I think it probably would be, or at the very least, it would be perverse. I don't know if it would be immoral.
I don't think it would be morally wrong.
I think it would be perverse, though. And I don't, again, since we're talking about right now, I think we're talking about non-experimental robots. We're talking about robots that actually are available. I don't see any commercial reason for that. That would not be in the company's interest to do that.
Well, here, Norm, here's a better one for us.
Marketing.
This is real life stuff. So Tesla, have you guys seen their video of the self-driving car? It's amazing.
No, I'll watch it, though.
No, this thing is driving on the highway. Like, there's a human being in the car, and he's only there just for legal reasons. He has to be there, but he's not. He never touches the wheel.
Right.
This thing drives out of a residential neighborhood, gets on a highway, gets off the highway, goes back to a parking lot, drops the guy off at the door, and then goes and parks itself. But it stops for a pedestrian walking in the parking lot. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But here's the interesting thing, Norm. Then you're going to get into situations eventually in the future. I really feel like self-driving cars are kind of inevitable just because we're going to get to a point where they're so smart and so much better at saving lives that it'll almost be immoral to not let a machine do the driving.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't make any sense.
Totally. We need them now because drivers have gotten ridiculous.
Well, think of it, Norm. Like, you'll get pulled over.
Road rage.
You're going to say, "Officer, I swear, I wasn't driving. I was asleep. I promise."
Yeah. That would be awesome. You know,
It'll be illegal to not text and drive. Like if you're driving, if you're in a car, you better be reading a book. You better not be driving because that's dangerous.
But where are you going with this with AI? You think that
think of it this way. Where I'm going with AI is there's going to be interesting problems we have to solve. And some of them will be, how do you have this car? How do you program this intelligent car to tackle a real life trolley problem?
They're actually already talking about that. So one of the problems that they're dealing with in self-driving cars is the following circumstance, where you've got a car that you're in that you're going to get into an accident, and the car can make a decision to either increase the damage to the other car protecting you or let your car take most of the damage protecting the other car? And what if the other car has four people in it and you're exactly right. It's a version of the trolley problem. And so they're having to address that ethical issue. I'm pretty sure what they're going to do is they're going to have to make cars that protect the driver or else the system is just not going to work.
Right, but that's interesting. That's interesting, isn't it, though? Because in a trolley problem, traditionally, you get to that thing where you're like, well, you know, you should sacrifice yourself to save the others. But from a commercial standpoint, if you're talking about like something you bought with your money, you obviously want that thing to protect you, you know, otherwise there's no point for you to have it. So like where you have that line, that's going to be interesting. And we're going to have to, as people, probably have some kind of like councils or ethicists working on these kind of problems, because these problems are going to start happening.
They're going to have to resolve it in the direction of protecting the driver. I'm convinced of that, because if you don't, the word is going to get out that your car could kill you when it could save you, and you're going to have people hacking the systems to avoid that, and so it's not going to be a sustainable design. So the only way to make it sustainable is going to be to protect the driver first. And if all the cars are doing that, then the net effect is going to be it's going to be very rare that there are going to be, deaths that could have been avoided. It's almost impossible to tell when it happens, for example.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to tell that from the outside?
You can always think of other thought experiments, though, where you would be fine in a car, but the car has to be asked to pick to save other people or not. For example, if you're going to hit a pedestrian, and you and the car will both be fine, but you can either hit three pedestrians or one pedestrian, you then still have the same kind of problem where, like, the car is going to make a decision to save you, but in either situation, you're probably going to be okay, but the car will have to decide how many people to kill. And then you get into weird situations where, like, you know, what if one of those pedestrians is the president or something, and like a super important person, but there's only one of him and four other people on the other side. I just think there's like really fun and interesting philosophical puzzles you can have with this sort of idea.
Yeah, perhaps. I want to go back to the kitchen bot, though.
Yes.
Because we haven't come up with an exhaustive list of the emotions we would want it to have. We figured it out that we wanted it to be funny, so we wanted it to have fun. And again, this is all simulated. We wanted it to be sympathetic. I would say that people would probably want it to be flirty. Right?
Really?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Ugh. No. No. I would not want my artificial entity to flirt with me at all. That would creep me out.
Well, I think you would want to give it that option, because I think that there are some people, again, living alone who would want to come home and after a stressful day have their kitchen bot service them.
It's an add-on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an app, there's an app for
I think
that.
It should be an option. It should be an option.
Okay.
I'll go back to the sex bot.
So we would want it.
It's not going to be a military. It's a good.
Yeah, I think
I'm losing you, Chalmer.
Yeah, we're losing you a little bit. I think you would also want to have the kitchen butt. How do you put this? Not just sympathy, but be kind of motherly. In that, when you came home, it displayed that it wanted to care for you. Right.
Hmm.
Like it does. Wasn't
I would
just,
disagree with you on that one.
Well, it wasn't just, you know, here's your burgers. That would be more like, I've made this delicious food for you. This is what your favorite recipe was. That's what you want.
I would rather.
Now you're kind of saying the same thing that Brittany.
You want a mom.
You want something that has a sense of satisfaction, does not have one, but simulates a sense of satisfaction. What they're doing.
Like no. I'm not saying satisfaction for of itself. I'm saying it just displaying a givingness.
I wouldn't want that. I would want it to be satisfied, but I want it to be a robot. I don't want it to be my friend or flirty or my mother. I would want it to be a robot and satisfied with being a robot.
But I can see where Norm's coming from too, that some people would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's an option, but I would rather it would be less motherly and more just satisfied being a robot. Hand me my drink and go back to the kitchen, and you're okay. Cool with that.
And this is I think we've come to close to the end, or maybe the end of the emotions that we would give it. And what I think is really interesting is to think of the emotions that we, again, simulated that we didn't give it. We didn't give it jealousy. We didn't
see Norm.
We didn't give it, you know, like you took me for granted. You're not giving me enough attention. We didn't give it that. Right?
See, it depends. Do you want to make a realistic robot? Because if you do, obviously you need to let that robot be passive-aggressive and condescending to me. Like, I'm sorry, did you work all day? I have nothing better to do but wash your dishes all the time.
Smash!
See, and that's why he needs to be satisfied.
Well, I just don't think we give it those emotions. I mean, why would it?
Because, Norm, you're a philosopher and you love to have a good argument. Wouldn't you want a contrarian robot who's like, I disagree? Anytime you said something?
No. This is interesting. I might want to have a conversational robot, but I wouldn't want it to be disagreeable just for disagreement. I would want it, if it was capable, I would want it to be rational and engage in a rational debate where, you entertain other ideas, but you don't you're not invested in them. You're not upset about them or whatever. You're just, well, what about this other thought? I'm not sure about this, but let's consider this one for a moment. There's nothing... That's not a contrarian position. That's just a reasoned argument. That would be interesting. So
you don't want it to be
I would
like
actually
that,
really like that too.
That would be fun.
You don't want it to be like that Monty Python skit where the guy pays to have an argument. He's like, no, you didn't.
That's awesome.
Oh, God.
I love that skit. I love that skit so much.
This isn't an argument. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. No, it's just this is just a gainsay. You're saying the opposite of it. No, I'm not.
No, I'm not.
there's a lot of, I guess the theme here is that there are a fair number of emotions that human beings have that we'd probably be better off not having at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we have them for reasons that have nothing to do with robots. We have them because of our biology. We have them because of the drive to perpetuate the species. And we have them to as errant versions of self-protection. From genuine threats, where we perceive things as genuine threats when we're not. And so it makes us angry, things like that. I mean, none of these are emotions that are really any good. They're certainly not any good at what they're trying to do. And in robots, they don't even have the situation to make the desires. So we just wouldn't have them.
So do you think it's impossible to accidentally create a self-aware robot?
I do. And that comes back to the ethical point.
So if intelligence
whoops,
and
self-aware.
Well, I mean, like if it does it come from just it doesn't come from just computing power and stuff. It must come from something else then, because if we just keep on making machines better and better and smarter and faster and better problem solvers, if we're correct with how we're viewing it, we're never going to accidentally make one that becomes self-aware.
I don't think we didn't mean to, and it just is now. I don't think we're ever going to make one that is self-aware, period. I think at best we would make one that acted self-aware. And I think it's possible for it to unintentionally act self-aware.
But what would be the difference on a philosophical level? Like if it was acting perfectly self-aware it seemed just like another person, but it was a robot. Like what would the difference be in that case?
Well, as far as the
what is that?
That is a door.
I think that the difference to us is just that, knowing that it's not genuinely self-aware, that we're not genuinely hurting it, for example. And we're not genuinely, if we turn it off, we're not genuinely killing it, that it's just acting that way. That's what I think.
Hmm. I mean, it's...
Well, and even if it became self-aware, we couldn't prove it anyway.
Right.
We wouldn't really know.
So, yeah. And that means we can turn them off or destroy them if we want to. And I don't have any ethical problem with this. Other people will, and that will be them anthropomorphizing. And, as long as you don't make them self-replicating, we'll be fine. If you make robots that can act self-aware and can self-replicate, then we're fucked.
Well, but I think that's inevitable. I think we're going to do that.
No, we're not.
People are trying to do that.
No,
you might not say a company will do it for commercial use, but there are researchers who are trying to do this.
No, we're not.
We have.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
No, we're not, because the supply chain is, and this is what people don't understand. I have an understanding of this because I worked in mechanical engineering for 10 years. The supply chain involves so many different companies and components, it's insane. So no, we're nowhere near making machines that can build, replicate themselves. Not even, you know, where Brittany, you talked about seeing a robot that was building a car and then another robot that was fixing a robot.
It was a drive shaft, I think it was. I can't remember. I don't know that much about cars. But it was making some intricate piece of a machine.
Yeah, and here's the thing.
As it was being repaired.
It got that drive shaft material in a specific form. It was a metal rod that has been worked on by probably no less than five companies before it even gets to that plant. We've got a company that actually drew the materials out of the ground. We've got a company that did that collected all those materials and sorted them and identified them. You've got a company that actually starts working with them, extracting the metals, purifying them. Then you've got another company that is forming those into a rod. I mean, this is a ridiculous process to make any kind of meaningful machine. And that's just a camshaft. Never mind all the other things involved in a car or all the other different materials. So, no, we're not going to have robots that can make themselves. It's not going to happen.
I think we will. I really think it's inevitable.
I think you're nuts.
Because you have 3D
printing. Do you think they'd be self-repairing, though?
Yeah. Why wouldn't they be? With, like, where 3D printing technology is going to be going, and also all those processes you just listed, Norm, nothing in principle makes those unable to be done by all one AI.
Yes, it does.
Nothing does.
Yes, it does. The distance between all the sources.
No, it doesn't. If you have a smart robot, it can coordinate all those things. It can coordinate other robots that have the ability to dig in the ground. It can do all that stuff. It can extract the ore. It can sort it and bring it where it needs to bring.
If it's smart enough to design without humans being able to interrupt this process. Give me a break. No way. That's ridiculous.
I'm not saying human beings won't be able to interrupt it. I'm saying a machine could do it all.
One machine is not going to be able to do
one machine.
And
I think one AI could control everything. Could do that. Oh yeah, I think that's, if you're making it a really smart artificial intelligence, I don't see why it couldn't.
Now, would you say one intelligence controlling several machines, or are you saying that it's one machine?
No, I'm saying one intelligence controlling several machines. I don't see why that would be a limitation for it.
That wasn't really what I had in mind. But sure, I think it's possible for there to be one intelligence that coordinated all of these things. What I'm not seeing, that is a long way off, because there are still a lot of tasks that machines can't do.
No, I got you, but I'm saying in principle, if we keep on creating machines, I don't see why that couldn't happen.
I think I'll buy that it could be that they're, as long as they're all interconnected over some sort of global Wi-Fi where they can exchange data and correct it and all that. And
we would
self-driving
kind of
trucks that bring the materials and then all.
It could not get itself there, though. We would have to create that infrastructure. So in a sense
– and that would be immense. That would be absolutely immense to create the infrastructure to coordinate all of that into one. And I don't know why you would, because these are all private – these are all individual companies that have their own interest. They're not going to want to be all centrally controlled by anything. So I don't see socially –
yeah, one thing goes wrong with that intellect.
Yeah, forget it. So I don't –
they wouldn't want that.
As well as, you know, you've got another intellect dictating how much money you're making. We don't want companies to do that now when there are people in charge of them, let alone a computer in charge of this. This is so tenuous. And even if you had that, which I don't think that it ever would happen because, again, of the motivations, but even if it did, to have that be something that could not be controlled, I don't understand that either, because there are so many steps and over such long distances, supply chains. We're talking about shipping things over oceans. And the possibility of not finding materials, which we're already running into now, if this is long into the future, where you've got that problem even more, I just don't see it. And I certainly don't see it being invulnerable, you know, where you can't turn off one
link. I'm not worried about it taking over the world or anything like that. I don't think that's really a concern that I share with some people who are worried about artificial intelligence, although it sounds like you don't think that it's even possible to make it a truly what we think of science fiction-wise as an artificial intelligence anyways. It sounds like other people are more concerned about that than we are. Here's something I wonder about, though. Do you think that if we keep making robots that can do human things, do you think we can eventually accidentally create a robot that is perfectly labor-saving, where it basically you don't have to do any kind of work? Like, like any work that you could do as a human being, this robot could do. What kind of effect do you think that would have on society? Because I think it could be potentially society collapsing if people suddenly no longer need to go do anything.
Well, you'd have to make enough money to buy the robot, which is one of the reasons.
Well, that's the problem, though. Like, wouldn't you have like a massive class system, or I could see that being a major problem?
I think you're going to have wealthy people who are nothing but drains on the system, but you already have that now, anyways.
And I don't think that you can get to that. I mean, it's logically possible. You could think of it as like a thought experiment, but the idea that we could create an AI that would essentially meet all of our needs, so that we wouldn't really need to be motivated to do anything to survive. I don't think the resources are even available to make that happen.
Well, even if you could, imagine it. Let's do another thought experiment. Imagine that you had a robot at your home right now that did all of the chores for you, did the grocery shopping, put gas in your car or whatever, all of the mundane tasks. Would that be a bad thing? I know for me, I think that would be freaking awesome. I would spend my day...
Yeah, read.
I would spend my day reading. I would play some games. I would produce some art. I would build some furniture. Even though the robot could build furniture, it would help me. It would be my companion, but I would still build it and design things. Right. And I would still be productive. I would still go on runs or ride my bike or exercise and play tennis.
I get that. I think that would be great. It would be awesome. Yeah. Like, I just wonder, what does that do to society where some people can't have them? And imagine also a society where everyone had them. Like, what happens? Like, you would almost need some kind of weird idea, like a universal income for people. I mean, if you didn't have to work, if you could just do whatever you wanted all day, it's just weird. Like, it changes the entire dynamic of society. It would invalidate money.
Wait a second. It wouldn't.
There'd be no currency.
No, you guys aren't. You guys are going too fast.
Is that what you're saying?
You guys are going too fast on this, because it took a tremendous amount of innovation and creativity to make these machines. It's presumed that you're not the human species, the planet, the universe, is not done innovating once you make those machines. So our attention starts to focus to whatever is the next step, either the next problem or the next adventure. Maybe it would be space travel, right?
No, I think it would be awesome. I just wonder, like, on a practical level on Earth, what would happen if people suddenly didn't have to do, like, almost any of the menial jobs you could think of?
Yeah.
If those were able to be performed by machines instead, would you have a society that collapses, or one that kind of like where everyone just hangs out and does tennis and plays games and does whatever they want?
You would have a society where people still had jobs, because there would still be jobs that were purely cognitive, because you're not talking about a robot.
Yeah, there'd be other things that we'd want to create.
Right.
Like writing books, doing art.
That's right.
People would still enjoy designing furniture, like Norm said.
Yeah, exploring space.
Mm-hmm. There are ways to be productive.
Designing clothes.
That aren't simply necessary. Like, there's ways to be productive that are that enhance and move things forward and innovate.
It would create a lot of pressure for people to be smart and to develop their intellect, which we're kind of already in a society.
It would definitely
like
change society. It wouldn't be bad, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would be good. I don't know if it would be good or bad. I mean, I look at it where, like, a lot of like what drives economics and is just the like the capitalism, for example, where you have, like, you know, your wages are set by, you know, the economic factors that will set, like, how expensive your job is that you do.
Right.
If you have AIs who could essentially just do that job, those wages are zero. Like, it doesn't make any sense to pay you anything for that. So, like, it's going to have to shift over to, I guess, people who are able to, create art?
That would be a good thing.
Although we're also creating intelligent machines that have the ability to write, you know, or symphonies and stuff like that. So, like, what happens if we also have robots who could paint pictures just as well as a human being?
Well, but people don't produce art and music out of necessity.
Yeah.
So, like, the reason that we already have this kind of in our society, our socioeconomic structure creates a situation where you have a large portion of people who are not completely dedicated to their own survival. So we have things like science and engineering. And those things aren't really done out of necessity. People will still do art and write just because if you create a machine,
they want to
fulfill that need. Yeah. The machine can't fulfill the need of someone wanting to write.
There's also a backstory issue. So a lot of art forms, music, paintings, are interesting not because of the music, the tones, not because of the actual colors on the canvas, but because of the backstory of the person. And that right. you can't have a robot duplicate that. So there will always be a place for human art.
You can have robots fulfill essential needs, but there are certain kinds of human needs that it would be impossible to create something that fulfills those, like the need for self-fulfillment or the need to feel creative or the need to feel productive. That's not something an AI can ever meet.
Yeah.
It sounds interesting. So it sounds like largely we are all of the mind that any of the kind of fears that people like Elon Musk or Sam Harris or anyone else has about AIs are completely unjustifiable and can never possibly happen the way they think they could.
Well, I'm not ready to say that because those are very, very smart guys. I haven't read a whole lot about what they have to say.
Well, I mean, like, so Elon Musk is someone who
I'm guessing there's something I'm missing.
We just lost Brittany.
We did?
Yeah, hang on one sec. Let's see if we can call her back.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't know what happened.
There we go. I know Elon Musk has talked about the idea that he thinks there's going to have to be some kind of universal income eventually for people.
Well, that would be a good thing. That would be a move toward the Star Trek universe.
I know. I think so too. But do you think people will accept that?
I think it's a real problem at a population of 6+ billion.
Right.
If you have a universal income and that many people, what prevents people from just escalating the population until it's no longer sustainable?
I guess the planet would have a natural carrying capacity that we would reach eventually.
It turns into a different problem than AI, and that's a whole different show.
There are some very, very serious wow, I sounded like Trump right there. There are some serious issues with that.
Huge problems.
With
huge.
Respect,
I've heard things.
Yes, the best problems ever. It's going to be great. if you have, let's say you have a population that is growing and they reach a natural resource limit, and so that forces them to stop growing. The problem is you already have a large population and you might have used a resource up so much that it not only can't encourage growth, it can't sustain the people that are there as is because they have lifespans. And you have this duplicated over and over and over again with things like fresh water, with things like if everybody has technology, you know, the actual materials that are involved in technology, the copper, the silicon, etc. Getting rid of the waste. You have a lot of these kinds of dynamics where you can create a system that it's not just run out, okay, we can't make more. No, it's run out and now everybody is fucked. So moving toward a universal income, to me, we're going to have to deal somehow with the population problem before that can be really viable.
Essentially, AI is not going to kill us. We're going to kill us.
Oh, no. I think we're going to kill us. And the fundamental...
Well, it's always us who will kill us.
And the fundamental problem to me is that humans have the right to reproduce. So I talk about... Well, I've mentioned that if you're making AIs, don't make them reproduce. That's the real problem. Well, that's also the problem with human beings. They reproduce and you can't have any control over it. And I think that that is a much bigger threat than AI.
Yeah, and this is a natural phenomenon in populations. You have a growth phase, you have a plateau, and then the resources run out, and it's inevitable.
Yeah, you can have a crash depending on the resource.
And unless you have the entire population uniformly agree to behave a certain way, which I just think would never happen. There's really no way to avoid it.
No.
Yeah. Like something I know that there was some kind of conference, I think, that Sam Harris went to with people like Elon Musk about 2 years ago where they were talking about what some people thought would be the dangers of actually creating an artificial intelligence, although it sounds like – I mean, it really seems like we aren't convinced that that's even possible. I mean, Sam Harris has talked about, like, if you did create not even a super intelligent machine, just a machine that was as smart as a relatively smart human being, and that's all it was. Like, it was just as smart as your, you know, more than, smarter than the average bear human.
Like, we'll call it Rob Schneider.
Right. Got it. Derp. And
how,
they went like
how
that.
How smart is the average bear human?
Yeah. Well, the question...
So smart, Chalmers. So.
Well, one of the thoughts that they were doing was saying because of how fast computing technology is, you would have, just from the math, someone said that, like, you know, 1 week for this computer that was as smart as a person would be about 20,000 years worth of our time. So someone, this person was like, every thought and all of, like, the advances that human beings have made in the last 15,000 years, this machine would be able to have all those thoughts in about a week. As far as
average IQ is 100.
By definition.
I guess.
Yeah. But I that sort of thing is interesting to me, like that you could create a machine or a series of machines that are able to basically, if they were able to be programmed to think like us as close as we could, you would basically have them be able to have like thousands of years worth of thoughts and thought experiments in hours.
Right.
And that's, I mean, the kind of like, I don't know, like the kind of like, think of like a lot of like the problems we have with physics seems to be people just needing to have time to think about it long enough and have some experimental data. You would have machines that are able to run all these experiments in real time and have years worth of results that even if they're just simulated, it seems like you have a lot of breakthroughs that could come out of that sort of thing, I would think. I don't know.
I don't know. I think what I would be excited about, I don't think this is going to be happening in my lifetime, but what I would be excited about with AI is once we do have the ability to let go of some of the kind of mundane thinking that we have to do, and we're already kind of doing this, what does that do to what we actually care about? So I think it's a way of getting to the stuff that we actually care about, which is exciting in a way. But I worry about that population issue.
It does not compute. So basically, we came to the conclusion that we should not fear AI. We should fear our own reproductive capabilities. And
real AI.
And don't give those capabilities to AI.
And do not allow them to self-repair. We will be fine when we get a common currency globally. So there we go.
All right.
It was a good episode, guys.
Thank you.
Conversation no longer serves any purpose.